Word of mouth.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. It's a literary week here at Word of Mouth. I'm going to be interviewing Salman Rushdie tomorrow for Writers on a New England Stage. And on Thursday, we celebrate the Big Read. That's a statewide Poe Fest with an all Edgar Allan Poe program. Seems fitting. The frost comes, the leaves fall, you stalk the woodpile, and you migrate inward and read. We're going to begin to burrow in today with the elements of a great short story. With us are the editors of two new collections of short stories. First of all, Lauren Stein, he's editor with Sadie Stein of Object Lessons. The Paris Review presents The Art of the Short Story. Lauren, great to have you with us.
Great to be here.
Do we have Tom Parada on the line? Tom Parada is going to be joining us in just a moment. He's guest editor for Houghton Mifflin's 2012 edition of the Best American Short Stories. But I want to begin with you anyway, Lauren. What makes a great short story? That's kind of the question that guided both of you. Now, Lauren, you asked 20 authors to choose a personal favorite from the 60-year archive of the Paris Review. Now, what did then the respective authors then do?
Well, they dived into our archives. Some of them knew. Some of them had a favorite that they'd been carrying around for years or decades, and they came back within minutes laying dibs on that one. And some of them combed through this vast list of stories that we have and really led us to things that in some cases we didn't know.
So these are the object lessons. They're sort of telling you what makes the story great.
Right, and we asked each one to introduce the story with a few words about what technical problems were solved by the story, how the story worked, what made it great.
Mm-hmm. So who is your audience then? Are you talking to aspiring writers?
Well, you know, we're talking definitely to aspiring writers, but I think everyone nowadays, even in writing programs, the tradition of learning the short story has fallen a little bit into abeyance, and I think all of us who love fiction read fewer short stories than we used to. So this is for students of the story form, but I think we are all kind of nowadays students of the form if we're interested in it. We're coming back to it.
I have to say, for me, it is my absolute most beloved guilty pleasure. I do so much reading for work that I have a stack of New Yorkers and Paris Reviews on my nightstand, and I just can't wait to dive into a short story. It seems to work for our busy lives.
I think that's true. At the same time, short stories are often about sort of upsetting nighttime, middle-of-the-night worry type
I've experienced
scene.
That.
You know what I mean? And yet, you can plunk them down in the middle of your day. So on the one hand, they're great in our distracted, fractured lives. On the other hand, they take a certain amount of, you know, they can kind of wrench you out of your out of the mood you were in before and put you in a new one. So there's a certain difficulty. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's kind of a fun thing about them.
We are unable to get Tom Parada on the line, but I do want to look at these two collections together in a way, because it was very interesting to read the two stories, short stories through time. I felt like I was seeing, Lauren, your 60-year archive allowed for just a range of stories. I would love to start with Jorge Luis Borges' Funes the Memorias. Now, this was published in what, 1942, 44?
I think it's in the early 60s that it was translated.
Oh, I see. You translated it first. Now, your guest writer, Alexander Gemón, writes that Borges' works belong to the tradition of literature with cosmic ambition. What makes this story so great?
Well, it's about a guy who can't forget anything. And can I read a couple of sentences from
it? Please do.
This is the narrator talking. He says, "We, at one glance, can perceive three glasses on a table. Funes, all the leaves and tendrils and fruit that make up a grapevine. He knew by heart the forms of the southern clouds at dawn on the 30th of April, 1882, and could compare them in his memory with the mottled streaks on a book in Spanish binding he had only seen once, and with the outlines of the foam raised by an oar in the Rio Negro the night before the Quebracho uprising."
Mm. Now, Borges here, or maybe the fictional Borges, seems to be the narrator. We're very aware of this story through his eyes. He meets this, what, heaven-taught plowman, this savant with an ambition to remember everything, to the point where he's kind of incapacitated and can't communicate it with others. Now, what does Alexander Gemón see as the object lesson here?
D- Do you know? I haven't read Sasha's introduction since he gave it to me. I've only read the story. So I forget. You tell me.
Well, can I tell you the part that I thought was so beautiful about
yes,
it? He reminds us that forgetting ceaselessly is essential for thought and language and literature, and in fact necessary for being a human being.
That's right. And that comes right out of the story. The narrator arrives at the same conclusion. It's very funny watching this guy, Funes, coming up with, he has his own numbering system. Mm-hmm. He gets tired of, he doesn't like numbers. He doesn't need numbers. So he just assigns names to different numbers because he remembers everything. And the same accident that turns him into this savant leaves him paralyzed. And the narrator realizes that this is in fact a saving grace, because if he saw more than he sees already, it would drive him crazy.
Well, in fact, you know, if you're going to remember every single event from a day, it takes a whole day to go through it.
Yes, exactly.
We're speaking with Lauren Stein. He's co-editor of Object Lessons. The Paris Review presents The Art of the Short Story. He's talking about some of the things that make some of these short stories great. And they did a wonderful experiment. They had 20 contemporary writers pick from the huge mountain of Paris Review stories and talk about them. Let's get to another one. Very much the interior of a woman's life in The Beau Monde of Mrs. Bridge, I believe from around in mid-50s. Now, this is this short story that is the seeds of what became two novels by Evan S. Connell and an introduction here by Wells Tower. What are the things that make this story great?
Oh, I just love this story, and I love those books, and they're a funny thing, because Connell writes about this middle-aged, very bourgeois woman living in 1940s Kansas City, and he just presents little vignettes from her life. And on the one hand, he's making fun of her. She's very much based on his own mother, in fact. On the other hand, you come to love her and really sympathize for her. And it's full of little surprises, and it's very much about racism and anti-Semitism and the sort of changing mores in the 40s and 50s when Connell's writing about her. So you, for instance, may I read a couple more sentences?
Please.
This is Mrs.
Please,
Bridges.
You have the floor now, Lauren.
Oh, I'm sorry that Tom isn't here.
Me too, but you know,
he
it's
put
great.
One of our stories in his collection. We were very proud. But this is one of her servants. She has lots of complicated relationships with her servants. For years, the laundress had been an affable old negress named Beulah May, who was full of nutshell wisdom and who wore a red bandana and a dress that resembled a dyed hospital gown. Mrs. Bridge was very fond of Beulah May, speaking of her as a nice old soul, and frequently giving her a little extra money or an evening dress that had begun to look dated, or perhaps some raffle tickets that she was always obliged to buy from Girl Scouts at various charities. But there came a day when Beulah May had had enough of laundering, extra gifts or no, and without saying a word to any of her clients, she boarded a bus for California to live out her life on the seashore.
Mm.
That's so quietly funny, because here we're presented with the stereotype of a nice old black servant, but of course the black servant, she doesn't want these dumb raffle tickets, mm-hmm. and she doesn't feel any special obligation to Mrs. Bridge. Thank God she goes off and does exactly what Connell did and moves out to the California coast.
She has an interior life of her own.
An interior life of her own.
I love this. Wells Tower says, glassware is unshatterable on Country Club Row. Conventional narrative physics, dramatic momentum, conflict, arc, slow, shrink, fizzle under the atmospherics that pressurize the habitat of Mrs. Bridge.
It's good.
Oh, it's so perfect. It's so tight. You know, these writers, they add so much to these stories. Did that happen for you? Any great surprises that you discovered in gems of stories that you hadn't really seen before?
Well, sure. I mean, Anne Beattie's introduction.
Love that, by the way, a New Hampshire novelist.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
He was new to me. And
she's so great. I love that. She said that there is an internal perceiver in the writer of the short story. They have to figure things out.
That's right. She's very good. That's a fun example of what we were hoping for and what we got, because that introduction is kind of technical. I mean, she's talking about when it makes sense to withhold information from the reader, which is a really interesting question. And I think anyone can read that introduction and see exactly what she's talking about. But it's something that professional writers think about all the time.
Mm.
Now, there were a lot of that.
I did notice on the Paris Review website, now there's a note there encouraging readers to show your commitment to keeping this short story alive by purchasing a copy today. Is the short story in danger?
Well, you know, in mid-century, it was a mass entertainment form. It was competing with movies and radio serials and early TV. And, you know, I think it's safe to say TV won the market share. And over the next few decades, all the big glossies, almost all the big glossies, with a couple of very important exceptions, stopped publishing short stories. So they're not, we don't go around with the template of short stories in our head the way I think our parents and grandparents might have done. But at a moment when magazine subscriptions are kind of falling across the board, we have more readers than ever before, and we're primarily a fiction magazine. So that tells me that there is a that there's a hunger out there, but in a funny, sometimes freeing way, we don't have the idea of how a short story is supposed to work, something that we have to figure out for ourselves, and I think that can be a lot of fun.
Mm. A lot of fun to read here. Thank you for whetting our autumnal appetite for some new, good new reading, Lauren Stein.
Oh, thank you. It's been fun.
Lauren Stein, editor with Sadie Stein, who's no relation, by the way, of Object Lessons. The Paris Review presents the art of the short story. Now, we didn't get to speak to Tom Perotta, guest editor for Houghton Mifflin's 2012 edition of the Best American Short Stories, but we do have links to see more on that collection, as well as the Object Lessons by the Paris Review. I do want to mention his novel, Tom Perotta's novel, Election, maybe essential seasonal reading. Now, attention readers, the Brattleboro Book Festival is on this weekend just across the river in Vermont, and the Boston Book Festival has a pretty packed agenda for the end of the month, October 27th. Again, more information at wordofmouthradio.org. Now coming up, Carnies versus Locals at an annual soccer match in Sandwich. Worlds collide when Word of Mouth continues.